Welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Puncher Podcast. I got Lex here with me. Lex, say hello to these good people who every week they come in, they listen if we're late. Although I think at this point you guys are like pretty good when we're late to know that there may or may not be a reason why we are late. And there's been a good reason for why we are late, but we're not going to get into that. So we've had a very eventful week. But let's start it off with what I thought was a very, very good weekend of just action. We got the tank news to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about the sort of moving parts of the lightweight division with Devin Haney and Jojo Diaz and Vasily Lomachenko. And then, did I mention Tank already? Yeah, something might have happened in that situation over there. But first of all, I thought we had a really good weekend of fights. I think for the most part, they were all enjoyable, all worth talking about. Let's start off, though, with the welterweight division. We had Jerron Ennis return to action against Tomas Delorme. This should have been in the ballpark of the toughest fight for Jerron Ennis thus far in his career. We had in Jerron Ennis one of the top welterweight prospects in the world and one of the budding stars of the sport, perhaps the next pound-for-pound king of boxing. Who knows? The expectations are all over the place for Jerron Ennis. But I got to ask you, did he meet your expectations that you had for this fight on Saturday?
I didn't like the fight going in. Like, it's weird. I love watching Boots, and I'm super excited about the potential of Boots. But I honestly feel that, like, I just think he's a 54-pounder, man. Like, I know everyone's pumped up. He's the next guy welterweight. But I look at him, and he's huge. He's a huge, huge guy. So, like, all right, let me save this take for later. I don't want to be like the buzzkill guy. So, okay, his performance was great. He blew through Delorme in a way that we haven't seen anyone really crush him yet. I didn't think it was a shot to the back of the head. And yeah, if he is going to stick around at 47, I'm ready to see him take on guys that, like, might be prepared to give some resistance.
I think that, first of all, Jerron Ennis and his performance on Saturday night was spectacular. Typically, when there's a first-round knockout, I don't really think that there's much to learn. What do you learn from a first-round knockout? You know, either one guy was cold, one guy just, you know, managed to land the perfect shot early in the fight, and it just upset everything. That happens sometimes. And then there are times when a first-round knockout, I think, confirms suspicions more than it does anything else. And I feel like that's what we saw in this fight. I don't know that this fight showed that Boots is more talented than anybody else, that he's a better defensive or a better offensive talent than any other fighter at welterweight or in the world. What it did prove, though, is some of the suspicions that we have about him, which is that this guy is special. And I don't know how else to say it. He just looks like a special fighter.
So let me ask you, while we're on the topic of special, since Boots, who was the last guy to give you the feel that he gives you, where it's just like, it's so obvious and clear, this man is the future?
That's a great question. I don't know. That's a good question, though. That is, one of those, like, trivia questions, but of myself. I don't know, to be honest. I don't know the last time I felt this way about a fighter. I don't even know if I would say that about Tank, because I don't think I felt the same way about Tank.
Let me throw some names out. Yeah. Terrence Crawford. Just give me yes or no. Yes or no. Terrence Crawford.
No.
Errol Spence.
No.
Tank.
No.
Canelo.
No. Canelo was a long progression type of guy for him to evolve into the fighter he is today. So no.
Okay. I guess just to say it, Lomachenko.
No. Lomachenko lost his second pro fight. There wasn't even time to breathe. We were all impressed with his pro debut. And actually, I wanted to bring up Lomachenko just a bit, But in his pro debut, you know, you got a sense like, ah, damn, this guy looks pretty good. Can't wait to see more of him. And then his next fight out, he loses. And it's like, yeah, about that.
So basically, you have to go into like a whole different era of fighters.
Yeah,
like you
I
have
think
to
so.
Basically go to like Floyd's era.
Well, because there's like an excitement about so much about him. So it's like there are definitely elements of excitement that we've all felt about certain fighters. You know, there may be an element that you felt about Anthony Joshua coming up where it's like, damn, this guy could be the next big thing at heavyweight in the heavyweight division. Or Lomachenko, obviously there was excitement there. Tank was like, man, this guy is crossing over, and like no one in boxing has really caught on that this guy is also very good. There are elements of all of that, but Boots seems to bring all of those together. And then the way he's knocking guys out is another level. That's just another piece of the pie here. Because what he did to Delorme was, I thought, really impressive. I mean, Delorme caught him with a pretty clean shot. Boots smiled at him. And then it was almost like he took it to another gear. And so up to that point where Boots was clearly in control of the fight, that was not even him ratcheting things up, which shows that there's an additional level that Boots can get to that nobody's even pushed him to. And the guys who've pushed him a little bit got knocked out. You brought up the punch to the back of the head. If you don't know, Delorme's team is filing a complaint with a commission alleging that the shot that knocked him out was an illegal blow. It was behind the head and therefore should not count. Or I guess they want to overturn the result or something. Did you see a punch behind the head?
Like, well, say it again.
Did you see a punch behind the head?
To me, it was like on the side of his head. But I understand what he's saying. But ultimately, man, so much of boxing is like gray area.
Rollins had a funny take about that. He's like, what he's mistaking for a mark to the back of his head from a punch was actually from him hitting his head off the back of the canvas.
Right. Like, ultimately, he just got cooked. I was going to bring it to the Butaev-Jamal James fight really quick. Butaev is, I'm going to say he's rough as hell. I'm not going to call him dirty as hell. But, like, a lot of what he does, you could sort of take away a point.
I'd call
but
him dirty.
But, again, this is boxing. There's a lot of that's gray area.
I'd call
and
him
if
dirty.
If you execute it a certain way without the ref seeing it quickly, whatever, you're good. And whether it was in the back of the head or not, the way the shot was so out of nowhere and so quick, they're going nowhere with the complaint. You just got knocked out in the first round. Just, you know, move along.
Well, I think, like, the thing to remember is that even if it was behind the head, one, it wasn't intentional. It obviously wasn't intentional. So that's dumb if you like subscribe to this. I don't think anybody's really going to pick it up. But the other thing is that sometimes those punches, those borderline gray area punches happen because you have two guys doing things. That punch lands where it does because of the position Delorme put himself in. So it's kind of like a give and take there. And it's really hard to call something a rabbit punch unless it blatantly is, like what we saw in the Butaev and Jamal James fight. But like, let's wrap up Boots with this. You know, we're both impressed with what he is. I know you think he's a 154 pounder. I don't think so. And the reason why I don't think so is that I do agree with you. He's a very big guy. That guy stays in the gym year round. I think he could go to 160. I also think that what that would require is for him to take some time off from the gym and to start putting on weight. But it looks like he's not doing that. I think they were talking about it on the broadcast, how he like teaches fighters and coaches or whatever. That's a guy who loves boxing and wants to, whatever he's doing, it's got to be about him being active as a fighter. And so I don't see 140 or 154 in his future anytime soon because of, I mean, unless that's where the money is. But I think right now.
And let me like, I want to talk more about the 54 thing. Like, I don't want it to sound like I'm like hating on him. I just look at the dude and he's enormous. I'm not going to say he's like a weight bully or anything because he can make the weight. But my issue with it is like, you know, he's the shiny new object, so everyone's going to bring up, like, Bud and Errol and Keith and Sean, but, like, those guys have fought for so long to get the position that they've earned, and Boots is the new kid on the block. I don't see those fights happening, and I say 54 because I don't really know what can happen for him at 47 that's exciting. I think if he goes to 54, exciting fights will happen immediately. But I don't expect that to happen anytime soon. I just say that because I think he's so good and his size is so much that, like, I'm more excited about him at 54 than I am at him at 47. At 47, all those, like, mid-level guys like the Butaevs, Stanionis, I don't even know, whatever mid-level guys you want to put, Mean Machine, whoever, he's cooking those dudes. Like, he, to me, he's ready for top-level guys. I just don't see him getting those top-level guys.
Yeah, I think Boots' problem is that he's come up a little too quickly, and he's impressed a little too much where the risk-reward is not there. And, like, I saw a bunch of takes that were, I disagree with a lot, that were like, oh, they've messed up by not putting Boots in the main event here. And it's like, I get the sentiment of wanting him in the main event. And I certainly think he deserves to be a main event fighter too. But at the same time, I think the respect Boots has earned is not lined up with the popularity that he has. So, like, Boots as a main eventer is not profitable. And the problem for that is that he's just, we all know what it is with Boots. We know he's, I mean, he has what appears to be pound for pound talent. The only issue is the casual fan at large is not quite aware of that, and he hasn't had that exposure outside of the Showtime cards that he's been on. He hasn't had that exposure as the, like, a main event guy that you can't do that yet. And until you can put him in fights with other guys that, you know, maybe they've got a little bit of a name, they've been in championship level fights, then you can do that. I think this Delorme fight was a good one. I believe going forward, Boots is going to be a main eventer. But, like, I think to expect him to have been a main eventer at this point, maybe a little bit misled.
I also, there's two things I want to touch on still. I think it's hard to get that level of, like, I don't know if branding's the right word, but just, like, to get that platform when he's still not truly committed to anybody. Like, he seems to have a positive work relationship with Showtime, which is cool. But I also think if he wanted to jet to, like, Top Rank theoretically, or DAZN theoretically, or whoever, Pro Bellum, he could. Or PBC or whatever, he could. Do I think, I have no clue where he's going. It seems like his father has a lot of control on that. And who's the other manager again? I always forget his name.
Cameron Duncan? That's his promoter.
Duncan. It seems like Bozy and Duncan seem to have their own idea of what they want to do. And I think if they made a decision sooner rather than later, it would be easier for a network to, like, push the button and be like, okay, we're going to feature this kid on commercials. We're going to give him a big push. I don't think, like, Showtime alone, I don't know if they're going to do that.
Right. And his promoter right now, Cameron Duncan, that is essentially like that's actually a brand new promotion. Cameron Duncan used to be a manager, turned in his manager cap, and now he's working as a promoter with Boots' dad effectively operating as his manager, if I remember correctly. And so there's not a lot of money behind these guys. There's not a lot of resources that they have, which is why there are calls on social media for Boots to get with somebody big. And I think they're the easy path, the predictable way that we know how things work is that he would have to get with a promoter or with PBC, you know, whatever we want to call them. But I also think that Showtime can do it. I don't necessarily think that that is the only way. I think if he stays connected to Showtime and whatever Showtime is doing, can be just as effective. And it's also the way things worked a while back where the networks were also the promoters, which is an odd part of boxing history. But anyway, what do you think?
Man, I have one last thing.
Go on.
Last thing. This is what we're talking about. So you mentioned to me there's a problem with Boots. Do you want to speak on that or no? I want you to. I don't know if you want to though.
So my problem with Boots is that it is possible that Showtime as a network may not be that effective in growing him, and that a big promoter may also struggle, because I don't think Boots is very interesting outside of his incredible talent. None of his interviews, I can't remember a single thing he said on any of those interviews. And unless they get him in highly edited sort of like human appeal pieces before his fights and on his satellite programming around his fights, it's going to be hard to, it's hard for me to imagine him catching on in a way that extends beyond just being a star in boxing, which is fine to be a star in boxing, but like Sean Porter's a star in boxing. Do you think Sean Porter on his own could sell and headline like a big card? I don't think so. And also Sean Porter doesn't have Boots' talent. So like you want to see a guy as talented as Boots have that mantle as well of being the guy that everyone knows. Like, you know, you think of boxing and it's like, okay, well, there's Canelo and then Boots and Errol Spence or Deontay Wilder or whatever. Those are the names that like you want to pop up. But like if Boots can't get his name in that mix because nobody really cares or remembers him after a card finishes, I think that's kind of troubling.
So I want to go on record and respectfully disagree.
Okay,
now,
that's fine.
I said this a long, long time ago with Tank, and I'm going to say the same thing with Boots. Boots has that thing. When Tank first was popping up and sizzling, a lot of people were like, oh, I don't know. This can't be. I don't know if you can do pay-per-view, whatever, whatever. I saw it. I was at Tank Pedraza live. I felt it. Boots has that thing. Now, I totally agree with you that he's so boring in front of the camera. And he needs to figure out, like, he doesn't need to go crazy and do all this weird stuff, but, like, he needs to give a bit more. And once he starts giving a bit more, excellent. But he has the hip-hop culture behind him. If you pay attention to all the certain rappers who like boxing, certain basketball players that like boxing, like curation Instagram accounts, they all pay attention to Boots. They all repost his knockouts. They all post pictures of him when he wins. Congrats, champ. Where's Errol and Bud? They need to come get the smoke, whatever. People are on him, and he has a city that loves boxing behind him. I just think someone needs to push the button on him. I don't know how it'll happen while he's just with Showtime, but once they push the button on him and give him that, like, we're on Fox, we're with PBC, or we're with ESPN, we're with whoever push, it'll happen for him.
I think that's fair. I think maybe that is true. I don't see it, and I'm also, like, here's another thing. We haven't really seen him be in a position to sell tickets. The Lipinitz fight was behind closed doors. The Van Heerden fight behind closed doors. This fight was with Jamal James headlining in kind of a head scratcher of an event where it was like, why are they in Vegas? Did they get a 2-for-1 deal with this and the Crawford fight? Crawford Porter's going to be in the same place. I don't know. You know, is Mandalay out here just paying for any event to get people to roll up in their casino? I don't know. But what I will say is that the time is going to come. I really hope that they can put something together for him. Put J-Rock on the undercard or whatever. You know, PBC's got Philly guys that they can throw together on a card, and we'll see what he does in his hometown. Because, look, if he can sell in his hometown, I think that turns the tide. I really do. But we got
to
see him.
Give him two fights at the Leocora Center, and by the third, he'll be playing where the Sixers play. Or fighting where the Sixers play.
Well, I mean, the other difficulty is going to be, can they get him opponents? Right. I don't think like a guy like Danny Garcia, who's cashed millions and millions and millions of dollars with the checks he's had over the years. I don't
no
think he's about to.
Guy is fighting Boots. I promise. Like what? Keith, no. Danny, no. Sean, no. Errol, no. Bud, no. Ugas, probably not.
I think Ugas would fight him, but he's like, wait. Do I fight Boots for like a little bit, or do I fight Errol Spence on pay-per-view?
Yeah, and this is not to say guys are scared of Boots. Every single fighter I named would step into a ring with him if the money was right. But like you just said, Ugas versus Errol on pay-per-view, or Ugas versus Boots at the Leocora Center on Showtime. Like, it's not a hard decision.
Yeah. But that's the thing. The risk reward here is like, you know, Boots is a tremendously talented fighter. You'd have to essentially get the same money for as a pay-per-view fighter in order to get in the ring with this guy, I think, at this point. But anyway, let's talk about the main event. Because that wasn't even the main event, but I think certainly was the main event of the weekend. The main event was Radzab Butaev and Jamal James fighting for the WBA welterweight title. And Jamal James, I thought, came out. I feel like the commentary did not ever watch Jamal James fight because they were like, well, why isn't he fighting tall? Why isn't he boxing behind a jab? It's like, have you watched Jamal James fight? That isn't what he does. And it's kind of crazy. It's like, why do we keep, it's almost like, why do we keep looking at tall fighters, the tall, skinny fighters? Why do we keep expecting these lanky guys to do anything other than fight on the inside? Because I actually think a tall fighter who fights tall is now the exception. Because most of these tall guys, they get in there and they just try to bang. And I felt that Jamal James actually was very effective in the fight when he got on the inside. The only problem is that when you're 6 foot something welterweight, what you sacrifice, if you can't like have one punch power with like Tommy Hearns, is like physical strength. And this was he lost the fight. And I think because not that he wasn't landing punches, not that his defense was terrible. I don't think either of those things were true. He turned in a respectable performance of himself, but just like when you were physically weaker than the other guy and able to get pushed around, I mean, how many times did Butaev just grab him, push him down and hit him? That happened so many times and the ref wasn't really catching it. And look, if the ref don't catch it, you might as well keep doing it. And Jamal James really just got like outworked. He got out hustled at times. And he obviously was outgunned in the power department. It was just a bad combination of things for Jamal James. And he ultimately was stopped by the referee. Were you impressed, though, with what you saw from Butaev?
No, I thought he did about what I expected of him. I mean, I thought coming into the fight, he's a cool little fighter. I forget who he fought on the previous Fox card that he fought on. But like I thought, I was like, okay, this is a nice little fighter. He's not like top three good, but he's definitely someone that would like make some fun and entertaining fights. And I knew it was like a toss-up fight. And I totally agree with you that he brought a level of ruggedness that I don't think Jamal James was prepared for. And I don't know if it's like due to the pandemic and he was out for a while, or would it just be like that 10 times out of 10? And I'm not even really, like, I don't care, because ultimately, like, Butaev won, and it is what it is. Cool fighter. I mean, I don't know if that type of style will work against like top level guys who can punch a bit harder than Jamal James, but I like him, and he may end up to be the WBA super champ, because if it was him versus Stanionis, I'll probably lean with Butaev.
I feel like him and Stanionis are probably about the same thing. I think the one thing that Butaev has, and I was not prepared for this. I hadn't noticed this at any point in his career, but he is a like really explosive fighter. And what I mean by that is like, if you notice that, like, there were times when Jamal James was like kind of out of range, and maybe he was in range for, but Butaev was not in range because Butaev was like, you know, much shorter than him. But Butaev would close the distance like in a blink. He would lunge forward and like he was in Jamal James's face. And there were moments where he did that and connected with hooks. I thought that was that was pretty impressive on his part. Not something that we see a ton in boxing. You know, Sean, you remind me of Sean Porter. Sean Porter's like, was, I don't know if we're going to still see that version, because we did not see it against Formella. But like the explosive, just like come out of nowhere with like lunging hooks. There were times when Butaev did that I was really impressed by.
Yeah, he kept using this, like, I think it was like he would fake a right hook and then like jump in with like a lunging left or something. I don't know. He repeated the same move a couple of times, but it was super successful.
Yeah, I think both of these guys had moments in the fight where they just kept doing the same thing. Like, did you notice in that one round, Jamal James landed like 7 uppercuts?
Yeah, that was
no adjustment
Jamal
from
James
Butaev.
Is like good for like one of those per fight where he'll just throw like 6 uppercuts in a row.
And then Butaev with the lead hooks was pretty good. But ultimately, I think the fight delivered in terms. I thought it was going to be a very good fight. To me, you know, I as somebody who has watched Jamal James before, and I'm sure you'd agree with me if you've seen Jamal James fight before. Despite being a tall guy, he's the type of fighter that just gets himself into these give and take fights. Now, not wars, but give and take, where there's enough action in the fights because he's just vulnerable enough that any fighter really could find success on him. And then he's also pretty good on offense, that he finds his punches getting there. And then Butaev, I thought, was going to bring the action, and also trained by Joel Diaz. Like, you ever seen a Joel Diaz fighter in a bad fight?
Wait, so when the fight started, you said, hold up, wait a minute, he's trained by Joel Diaz. Uh-oh. Like, what were you referring to exactly?
Joel Diaz has had a rough year.
I didn't put it together. Like, I'm not even sure what.
Well, he trained Yildirim for the Canelo fight. That should tell you everything you need to know.
That's right.
Yeah. He had a string where he had, like, 3 high-profile losses.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not the biggest fan of him. Like, whenever he does interviews on, like, Ellie Secback or whatever, he has some, like, really strange takes. I mean, it's not, like, that big a deal, but whatever.
You don't like his commentary or his advice in the corner?
What advice?
Fucking throw punches. Always dropping the F-bombs in the corner.
It's like advice my mom would give. Come on, you got a punch. It's like, okay.
No, I mean, that is the most frustrating thing for me to listen to, is when the corners, like, will give the advice that they give them. It's just like, or no, it's not like just throw punches. It's the advice is not like, there's no action to it. So it's like, if they tell them, like, you got to be stronger in there. It's like, well, how? Like, how do you want me to be stronger? What am I supposed to do? Do you want me to pick him up? Am I supposed to, like, what do you want me to do? Am I supposed to punch harder? Like, where is my, like, what do I need to do in order to turn things around in this fight? And fighting with more balls, I don't know. Maybe a Maybe it computes for some, but I don't know about for me. If it would, I'd be like, well, how? I guess I'm very direct. But yeah, so Butaev, it looks like we'll see what the WBA, I mean, they've appointed this tournament, which has been totally ridiculous and inconsistent with any of their other mandates that they've had in terms of cleaning up their act. Although they hired Gary Shaw to do that, who's bribed officials in the past. So I don't know how they chose this guy as part of their cleanup process, but that's what the WBA is doing. I mean, we've all hated on them for years, and I guess they've done nothing to really change how we feel about them. But it looks like if that holds true, Butaev will face the winner of Ugas versus Dan Yonis. But I got to believe that fight is not going to happen. And somehow, some way, Boots is going to wind up in the mix here. And if he does, I mean, Butaev is in trouble. Stan Yonis is in trouble. Those guys will get walked through, I believe.
Wait, so I was wondering if Ugas, because I assume that Ugas is just going to vacate. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they'll fill somebody in?
No, I actually don't. I think they'll just mandate Stan Yonis to fight Butaev.
Yeah, I think they would just make that, which is like, it's funny because it's like an interesting fight. I guess it'd be fun to watch, but like, how compelling is that? Like, really? Like, where's the winner go? Like, you think anyone's going to care about either of those guys having the WBA championship belt? Like,
no, nobody will care. And then, I mean, it'll just basically be like the way the WBO belt was in the mid 90s, or not the mid 90s, like 10 years ago. Like, no one cared that Vyacheslav Sinchenko had the WBA welterweight title. Like, it just was an afterthought. No one cared about it.
Okay, so like, what's the play here though? Because, you know, me, I try to be a common sense thinker as much as I can, And I'm like, why would you want to take your belt away from big fights? Like, is this a petty thing? Revenge? Is this like there's dirty money coming under the table? Is it a combo of all that? Like, what? Why would you? I truly don't understand.
I don't know.
I would want my belt with the Ugas and Errol winner.
I don't know that anything there for sure, but I think it's a combination of all of those things. And I think the fact that Gary Shaw is the one who's been put in charge of this process. Gary Shaw has been very critical of PBC. He's got lots of enemies within boxing. And the fact that he's been the one that was chosen says a lot about what the WBA is doing here. And the fact that they've been really inconsistent in enforcing rules in terms of like how they're going to handle situations where the problem that they created, by the way, of having too many titles in these weight classes, they've now been completely inconsistent in the way in which they're going about reducing the number of titles. It's to the point where it's like, no, you guys are not just incompetent, but you're actually doing this on purpose. And I mean, they can do it however they want, because at the end of the day, like, if they lose out on sanctioning fees from their titles being part of bigger fights, then, like, you know, you screw over your business. I mean, I guess you get what you deserve.
It's so weird to me. I mean, like, as a business person, you should be in the industry to make money. So you're taking your fight to your belt to what? Like, Butaev versus Stanionis in Dubai? Like, is that... That's prestigious. That's where the money's at. Like, I don't know.
Also, when you factor in that the on paper purses will probably be lower, which means that the sanctioning fee will be lower than what the fighters are actually getting. So you're getting a smaller cut than you actually could be getting if there was some sort of regulation on that thing. But I mean, is anybody like, I think I feel bad for the fighters like an Ugas who could potentially have such a big momentous fight with a lot of money at stake. Could he have it slightly reduced? Maybe, but I don't think it reduces it that much in terms of like if he gets that pay-per-view with Spence.
Yeah, I was actually, I've been wondering about that. I'm glad you brought that up. So Ugas vacates, like, does that affect his like negotiating leverage? Because it's at the end of the day, it's Al, I guess, who's doing the negotiating, right? Like, he's not. Like, how does that work? Break it down.
I think it hurts it a little bit. I mean, like, you can't sell it as a unification anymore with three titles. You know, you got obviously the two titles that Errol has, but you're not able to unify the three titles, which I think lowers it a little bit. But like, I don't think it would be a demonstrable amount that much is affected. And in terms of like who loses the most, I think the WBA is the one who loses the most, because they go from getting whatever $100,000 that they're going to get from the title fight, that now becomes zero. Whereas if Ugas was getting paid, let's say, you know, rather than getting 100% of what he was going to get paid before, he gets 95 because there's not another title put at stake here. So in percentage points, like, they WBA loses 100%, but Ugas loses what, 5 or 10%? Like, that's okay. On the undercard, we had Michel Rivera taking the next step in his career against, I can't even remember his first name, Jose Matias Romero. And we had recently seen Matias against Isaac Cruz, who we will talk about in just a bit. What'd you think of our friend Michel Rivera?
I mean, I've always been a big fan of him. I think you may have been the first person to like put me on. You were like, yo, this kid's fighting on Showtime. I think you're going to really like him. And he's looked great every time. He looks better and better. I think he has, like, his defense may be a little leaky, but I don't think it will really matter until he's in the ring with like top level guys. And I like his trainer, too. I like that he's with Herman Caicedo. I'm a big fan of his. And every time he fights, I'm just, like, looking forward to, like, how he's going to progress. Is he going to continue knocking dudes out? Is he going to look clean boxing? I thought this was a good test. I mean, he made someone in Romero, who I thought had a competitive fight with Cruz, he swept. He won every round pretty much.
You know, the thing that really steps out about this fight, or stands out, is that I think the Showtime crew, when it comes to evaluating like the talent of fighters, they're probably the least likely to get swept up in the hyperbole of things and like not give in to overhyping. I think they're probably the best at that. And by the way, it's not perfect, so don't take that the wrong way. But so I thought it was pretty interesting how high they were on Rivera during the broadcast. I did not like Rivera's last performance. I thought it's possible we could blame Fernandez for it, but like, I thought that that was a boring fight. I thought Rivera was trying to do things that he should not be doing in the ring, and he really paid the price by being in a very close fight against a guy that ultimately we found out, if he just stopped fooling around, he could knock him out. I thought in this fight, he accomplished in this fight without trying to accomplish it what he set out to accomplish in the fight against Fernandez. In the Fernandez fight, he came out to show he was elusive and could move around the ring and all this stuff. And I thought he looked foolish doing it. And he got caught so many times because what he was doing is just that. That's just not part of who he is. In this fight, he fought in a defensive way that was way more natural for him. And he looked really good in the fight. I got to give him his credit. We didn't see the power really come into play. But Romero's the kind of guy that, like, you're not going to knock this dude out. Like, he's not there to get knocked out. And, you know, it's going to be a while before somebody... You're going to have to catch this dude clean. And he's not easy to catch clean. But Rivera did really good. I think he really established himself as, like, one of the top prospects to be looking out for at this point. And at 23 years old, I mean, the future's pretty bright for him. There's still development that he needs to do. But I mean, he's at the perfect spot right now for a guy who, you know, does not have like that sort of amateur pedigree or anything like that where you could just rush him in terms of his matchmaking.
I mean, all agree all the way. Yeah, how old is he? Is he 23 or 24?
He's 23.
Yeah, he's a baby. Like, it's crazy how, like, we look at professional boxers, it's like they're in the ring, whatever, but that's young, man. Like, that's still a lot of, like, the opportunity to build into something if you like do it the right way, don't rush and stuff like that.
Okay, over on ESPN, or actually it might have just been ESPN Plus, Jose Zepeda and Josue Vargas met in the main event, and I gotta tell you, man, I thought that Zepeda was done. I thought, look, he's been in wars, he's had a very tough time in most of his fights, and he arguably lost to Hank Lundy. It may be time, and this may be the matchup where they got this young guy who can box a bit, where it is basically going to be the end of Zepeda and a little bit of a passing of the torch moment. And then Josue Vargas and Zepeda's camps, they had a little bit of an issue at the weigh-in. Punches were thrown. Curses were thrown. There were some kicks that were thrown. And it led into a very, very heated matchup. And I got to tell you that I can't really think of too many people in 2021 who've taken a bigger L than Josue Vargas. Like, you had all this happen at the weigh-in. You get knocked out in the first round, like spectacularly knocked out in the first round. Your homie watching the fight cries, which is captured on camera for all of us to use as a clip on Twitter. And then
So that gif was from the whole... I saw that. I'm like, that can't be from the Vargas fight. There's no way.
Oh, was from that Vargas from that fight? Yeah.
Oh my God. I hope that was his brother or something.
And then they get into a scuffle. Shout out to whoever it was also on, I think it was Jamel Herring, who snitched on Twitter by post or mentioning that they were throwing gang signs at the weigh-in. And then the following day after the fight, Josue Vargas's team met up with Jose Zepeda's team and had a little bit of a rumble and attacked them. But at the end of the day, Josue Vargas is the one that got knocked out, most likely going to be cut by Top Rank because it's kind of what they do to guys in Josue Vargas's position. And I don't think I blame them. So, I mean, can you think of anybody who's taken a bigger L this year than Josue Vargas?
There's someone, yeah, Regis Prograis.
Regis hasn't lost, though.
He loses by his decision making.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah. Regis Prograis took a huge L this weekend. Man, he did. I think Regis Prograis is a good, that's a good one. But I in terms of man,
But no, I see what you're saying. I didn't understand this fight to begin with. Like, when they made the matchup, I know of Vargas, but I'm not that high on him. And what's his name? He looked. I'm tripping. I can't remember.
Zepeda?
Zepeda. Yeah, sorry. Zepeda looked bad in his last performance, but he's still way more experienced at that level. And I'm like, what? Like, why is this fight even happening? And I mean, not to down it, but I just thought it was different levels. Two guys on two different levels, and it played out. Maybe not as extreme as I thought it, as it happened, but I pretty much thought that Zepeda would cook him, and he got cooked.
Really? You thought that Zepeda was going to go out there and blow this dude out?
I thought he was gonna win. I didn't think he was gonna smash him. But Vargas is just not
Pause.
that experienced. He's a young fighter. He hasn't had a lot of top level experience, and I don't even know if he's that good.
Well,
Like
you got
he
your
might be
answer.
okay-ish.
I
Huh?
said you got your answer.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like that's why when they announced it, I was just like, "Why? Like, is Vargas way better than I know, or is he just gonna get bodied?" And he got bodied, so I wasn't too sharp. And like you said, if he got dropped, it wouldn't shock me at all.
What I
I do feel bad for him because
Oh, I
boxing's
don't feel
tough,
bad
man.
for
Like
him.
you guys bounce around and try to, yeah, everyone's trying to make it, right?
Oh,
But like.
well, remember Top Rank was doing those shows during the pandemic in the bubble, and they made a big deal about the bubble, and they mentioned it like 500 times on their broadcast. Well, remember when Josue Vargas's trainer couldn't go be in his corner for his fight because he decided to go down to the casino, and they had literally told him, like, yo, if you leave the bubble and go down to the casino, you cannot come back in until you quarantine. And this dude went down to the casino.
Knucklehead.
Yeah, I guess we can say that. What I like about Zepeda is that this dude he's clearly no longer got the same skills that he had earlier in his career. And he's okay with that. He's like settled into, like, all right, well, I'm just gonna punch hard then. Like, I'm just gonna use my old man experience, even though he's probably not even that old. He's gonna use his experience and say, like, look, I'm not trying to go to war with you. I'm trying to make you walk into something that you don't expect coming. I mean, the shot that he landed that knocked Vargas down was like a pretty simple 1-2, if I remember correctly. But like, it was thrown with enough force that it was like, look, he got that old man strength now. It might have kicked in a little early, but like, he ain't playing. And he's getting dudes out of there now. And so,
It's just levels, man. Vargas is not on the level yet. I mean, maybe he'll never be on the level, but he's still a young and inexperienced fighter.
I
But
don't think he's getting
I'll
to the
say this
level.
though, as far as we say it again,
I don't think he's getting to the level.
yeah, he probably won't. Not as far as like top rank and Zepeda goes. I'm very curious. Like, was this a setup for Teofimo to get to like 140 and do what he does? What do you think? And real quick, I ask because, for those who don't know, Teofimo has been talking about I can't make 135 for a very long time now. Like I want to say like 2 years. And I don't think after this after his fight with Kambosos, I don't think he's gonna stick around. I could be wrong, but
The thing about that is, having seen Teofimo up close at a fight, not in the ring, but literally like standing in the same lobby together and sizing this guy up, I don't know how he doesn't make 135. He's small, like way smaller than I expected for a guy who says he's having trouble making 135. And the other thing that, to his credit, the dude is in incredible shape. He's training all the time. So I'm not really sure, unless he's adding on too much muscle, that it's like that's why it's difficult to make 135. But I feel like he's one of those guys like Boots that they could make the division for a while as long as they stay disciplined the way they've been thus far. But I don't know, maybe these, you know, maybe Teofimo wants to take a, like some longer breaks and like really have give his body time to rest and recover and also live life a little bit. Where it's like, yeah, I don't want to have to get back in the gym and kill myself to get down to 135. Maybe I want a little bit of cushion between me training and like me living life. But yeah, I don't know about that. I think Zepeda's kind of in a tricky spot because like they just announced Jose Ramirez is going to be fighting Jose Pedraza next year. So like what is there now for Zepeda to do? That's an interesting question. I'm not sure what they do with him. If they have anybody at 140 who maybe they want to toss him in there with.
Shout out to Pedraza for being like top range de facto, like scratch test, basically.
I feel like he's one of the, like, there are guys that, I guess we could say the glue guys, like they're not necessarily the best players on the team. They're not necessarily the stars, but like you need these guys on your team. And if you put one of these guys on your team, they will take you over the hump in terms of like, they bring something, whether it be like just chemistry, leadership, or just like that clutch factor off the bench. Like they hold things together. And I feel like Pedraza is one of those guys where it's like, he's done really well for Top Rank in terms of like, he's just always there. He's competitive in all of his fights. He's going to like give a great account of himself every time they put him in the ring. I wonder who else are the glue guys of boxing.
That would be like a good draft.
The glue guys. Who are the middle of the pack guys that like they've just been around forever. They've been in a bunch of main events and like you're totally fine seeing them in main events. Cause like if Pedraza loses to Ramirez and it's the fight we think it's going to be, like, you're still going to be fine watching a Pedraza in the main event.
Yeah, he always shows up and fights hard. He's, like, he's beatable, but, like, you have to be a certain level to get through him.
Who's the PBC glue guy?
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if PBC does glue guys the way Top Rank does glue guys.
Nah, they got glue guys.
No, I mean, everyone probably has glue guys. But, like, it's much more obvious at Top Rank, in my opinion.
Lipinitz is going to wind up being a damn glue guy.
I don't know.
I guess we'll see Lipinitz on the
PBC card again. Like, what's going on with Lipinitz? Like,
I don't know, but maybe after what Boots did to him, that's the end of that. But like, but also that's a credit to Pedraza because after what Tank did to that guy, like you could have easily seen him like just be like, "Yep, that's it. I've been in." Oh, you know who's a glue guy for everybody? Gamboa.
Gamboa is a glue guy for sure. For sure. You know who's Top Rank probably has a picture of this guy in their office, like saying thank you for being such a good glue guy is Ray Beltran.
Yes. Glue guy Hall of Fame.
He's got his jersey
in the rafters.
The award after.
The Ray Beltran. We got to do the Ray Beltran draft.
The Ray Beltran draft, because like I don't understand like what the relationship he had with Top Rank, but he came back time and time and time and time and time again.
Yo, he tested positive for PEDs, and Top Rank got him right back into another title fight. And Ray Beltran also just had a cool story. Like everyone liked Ray Beltran, except for the people that were against PEDs.
Not long ago at all.
Yo, if Uz Kategi wasn't out here on the roids, and I think he's just going to get a pass for this because it's like, I mean, like, is anybody really upset about Uz Kategi using PEDs? He's going to be a glue guy.
Uzi is definitely like that. That's a perfect pick for PBC. Like, Uzi is a great pick. And I was very disappointed, but not surprised that he got caught.
Wait. So, one, not surprised. Why?
I was at the second fight he had with Durrell, and he looked ridiculous. Like, I think it was on the Wilder Ortiz undercard, maybe, and he looked crazy. Like, first of all, when they first had that fight, because I'm a Durrell fan, both brothers, and I'm like, yo, you have to be careful with these kids from South America. They come in off the streets. They're, like, sweeping the ground, selling hats and stuff like that. They come to America for the bag. They're not losing, and they could punch hard. And sure enough, he beat Darrell ass in the first fight. Got lucky that the knockout was at the bell. Second fight, I see him in person. I'm like, yo, his endurance is insane. Oh my God. And so when you know, he popped for EPO, I'm like, oh, okay, now it makes sense.
All right, EPO. Like, I was like, wait, EPO? Who's putting this type of money into Jose Uzkategui? That's the one thing I was like, okay, if a guy like Uzkategui, who I don't think has like been a big earner throughout his career, like I imagine he's gotten paid like decently, but like he's like a glue guy. Glue guys don't get paid like the big bucks. And so who was out here paying for this dude to have EPO done? Unless I'm totally wrong about this, but I feel like EPO is like, if you're doing EPO, like you're on the higher end of the PED spectrum. You ain't out here buying Diana Ball in the local gym from that jack dude that squats 400.
Well, I heard, yes, EPO, from what I understand, is like you're really out there not giving a F. But I've also heard that in Mexico, I don't know where he's training, but like in certain places, you know, Latin America, they just sell PEDs like over the counter. Like I've been in Mexico City and we drove past like RX buildings with like muscle guys and needles outside on the painted on the wall. So like I think it's just out there to be got. I mean, I don't know if they're selling EPO exactly, but
well, you know. I mean, what the hell it even is EPO?
All I know is that was Lance Armstrong's drug of choice.
All right, I typed EPO into Google. Not a good idea. First thing that pops up is the European Patent Office. Then something about HMOs and PPOs. And then now we get to the WADA. So let's see what WADA says. What is EPO? EPO is a peptide hormone that is produced naturally by the human body. Oh, word. So Uzkategui's fine.
Yeah, let him go. Give him a Oscar Valdez pass.
EPO is released from the kidneys and acts on the bone marrow to stimulate red blood cell production. An increase in red blood cells improves the amount of oxygen that the blood can carry in the body's muscles.
Right. So, stamina.
Well, what I want here is for them to say, like, why do people take EPO? Well, EPO is being taken because it leads to like increased stamina or whatever the case may be. But instead, they don't have this here.
Shout to Dino Fidel, I think, in our Discord. Randomly, he will have like the hottest takes on PEDs, I think, of anyone in our Discord. So tomorrow I'm gonna bring it up to him. But from what I understand, you take EPO to get more blood, red blood cells in your body. So as you're exercising or performing, you're running out of red blood cells in your muscles. So you get fatigue. You take EPO, no fatigue. I think.
Uzkategui was out here training to go 12 with Benavidez.
It's so whack, man, because like, right, we all don't want cheaters in our sport, right? But I knew that fight was
That's a dangerous butt right there.
Nah, I just knew. Like, everyone was like, oh, who wants to see Benavidez versus Uzkategui? It's like, bro, whatever. That dude comes and fights every fight. Is he, like, going to be Canelo or something? Like, probably not. But listen, Benavidez is still only, like, 25, man. Like, sometimes it's okay to just watch a fight, and it's exciting. I'm not going to lie. Boxing fans, recently especially, have been getting on my nerves. And it's, yo, not everything needs to be like best versus the best. Yo, sometimes it's cool if it's just fun and exciting. You don't have anything going on Saturday night. You kick back, maybe call some homies over and watch a cool fight. That was definitely going to be a cool fight. Now, I don't know if, I mean, it's kind of off topic. I don't know if we're all, if this was like in the notes, but Tyron Davey, I don't know, man. I think he's a little small for David.
He may not be small for Benavidez. What I think he will be is very similar to Ronald Ellis, which is like, I mean, Khyro Davis will show Benavidez something that like Benavidez needs to make a little adjustment for, but ultimately he will figure it out and he will stop him late. I think this fight will look like Benavidez's last few fights. That's, I mean, I that's how I see it playing out. Like, to Benavidez, at least in our brief experience with him, I mean, if you really think about it, like, since Benavidez kind of came on the scene and won against Ronald Gavril, take away the Ronald Gavril fights, he's only had 4 fights. This will be his 5th fight. And all of those fights, except for the Jay Leon Love fight, which, like, anybody could have seen this coming, all of them went at least 9 rounds. So, like, Benavidez is going to play with Chiron Davis. I don't think he just smokes him out. We're going to see the typical Benavidez is, like, a very violent individual and loves to beat somebody up over the distance of a fight. And I also, like, you know, I don't know if it's a better fight, but, I mean, it's Jose Benavidez. He was already in a fight that he would be heavily favored to win. You just may know Uzkategi a little more than you do Chiron Davis. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about Tank. So, Gervonta Davis was supposed to have a pay-per-view fight with Rolando Romero, but Rolly has since been pulled from the pay-per-view after some allegations were made on Twitter with not just one person, but several women coming forward with stories about their interaction with Rolly, which ranged from, well, I guess I don't want to describe what was in the text, but needless to say,
inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, Rolly had some inappropriate behavior, definitely creep status. I don't necessarily know we'd go so far as to, like, call him the worst things, but creep definitely fits perfectly, I think, with what he did, or what he was doing. There's, like, all different variations of the story, but essentially, they all have the same theme there. So, Showtime, I saw a lot of people on social media saying, like, you know, it's probably nothing's gonna happen. And I thought that because these are allegations and they're gonna do some investigation or whatever, that maybe they wouldn't pull Rolly from the fight until the investigation was concluded, you know, just to cover their bases and all that stuff. But instead, they were like, nah, Rolly's out. So, did they make the right move?
I mean, I guess it just depends on, like, I don't think there's a wrong move here. You know what I mean? I think it just depends on what Showtime, how Showtime wants to present themselves. Because Showtime easily could have said, you know, we're going to let the Nevada State Police Department or whatever handle their business, handle the investigation, and make a decision from there. But they got ahead of it. In my opinion, would they have been wrong if they went about this situation that route? I don't think so. But then you have to deal with, like, the fans and the media, and part of me, not even part of me, I'll just be honest, like, I don't exactly like the precedent this sets, because you're giving the writers especially a lot of power who don't have a lot of objectivity, because, you know, this is boxing. You know, you got Angelo, whoever's listening. We all can name a bunch of fighters who have gone through some nonsense and still fought on. And really, by them pulling Rolly, this says, if we like the fighter, we'll look the other way. Or if we like the event or we like the promoter. And if we don't, we're gonna throw the flag. And I think that's tough, man. That's very tough. But, you know, ultimately it's up to Showtime, and I don't think they were in the bad either way. If they felt this was the right decision, it was.
I think, like, this was the right decision. You had to do this. This is not like the Benavidez Uzkategi fight where, like, very few people relatively were going to see it. No. There were millions of people that were watching the videos with Tank and Rolly. And this is one of those things where it was going to get out. And I don't know if you remember this, but in 2018, CBS had a little issue where Les Moonves had to, you know, leave after some sexual harassment stuff came out. Nobody wants to deal with that. And it's just far too much bad press to sit here and let it play out, which, you know, you're totally fine with saying that, but like, you're also totally fine with like just being like, yeah, if I don't have to have this burden hanging over the promotion of this event, I would, or I would definitely just get rid of this. I mean, you could live with a lot of things, but it's better if you just remove them. And if Rolly is cleared, and it turns out that, which I doubt, but if Rolly is cleared and this turns out like, yeah, it wasn't what it really was, and they're able to prove it, which, I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to prove anything, really, unless somebody was recording, then he can come back later and fight. But, like, I mean, Showtime, I feel like in 2021, bad news spreads quicker than ever before. And this is bad news. And it's bad for everyone involved to be out here connected to it. I mean, it's understandable if, like, a fighter's out here drunk driving. That's terrible, and they shouldn't do that. But that isn't, you know, pushing or not... how do I say what he did to what covers everything?
Just say sexually inappropriate behavior.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. That's the type of thing that I think there's some things we should not have any tolerance for. And like, if you can clear your name, good for it, good for you. But like, this is one of the things where it's like, nah, we got no tolerance for this. We'll pick you back up if you can prove that this ain't what it is. But like, there's enough evidence here to go against you. And I know that's kind of dangerous because like, oh, well, any one accusation and you're off, you know, you're off the card. You know, you also have to make sure that things are reputable. And I judging by the people that I know that work part of the situation, I believe that those people did their due diligence to make sure that they weren't making a hasty decision.
I mean, I want to jump in. Even if like, and I agree with that. But even if they weren't, like, the reality with this situation is, like, you know, we know the writers. They weren't going to let this one go away because, you know,
but here's doing the card. I push back on that. I don't think that they have the pull you're giving them credit for. I don't think that boxing fans matter that much.
Let me clarify real quick. Do they have pull for real? No. But, like, do they have enough pull to write articles?
Let me flip this on you. They can't make with all the pull that you want to give them credit for, they put over a streaming service for a year, 18 months or so, that had to leave essentially the US, and they showed that they are powerless to that. There are levels or they've slandered certain fighters over the years, and that has not done anything to, I mean, look at the way they've covered Tank.
Yeah, and so when
can't
I
stop
say,
a runaway like, train.
My point is this. Would these writers hurt the bottom line of the event if Rolly stayed? No. But if Rolly stayed, they will make sure that everyone who watches, as much as they can control, know that Rolly is a weirdo or whatever, pervert. I don't know, whatever adjective you want to use.
Pervert? And that's a all word I'm that we and don't use Showtime, as much anymore that we should. Huh? I said pervert's a word that we don't use as much as we should.
You pervy. I don't know. But either way, I think Showtime took that into consideration. And at that point, it's like, is it worth it? No, because these guys, not only these guys, but boxing Twitter also would not leave that alone. I think, like, if you look at the traction that Rolly's trash talking, that was garbage was getting. It was going to be a big, hold like, on, not huge fight, but it was going to be like a nice size pay-per-view event. But you don't want people talking about that. It takes away from the event. It makes boxing look stupid. It makes Showtime look stupid.
Well, and then there's and also so, yeah, the, there's also like, oh yeah, we've come out and found out that there's proof that all of this is true and more. You look like morons because you didn't take this seriously. I think that there are certain things that you don't take a chance on, and this is one of them.
Oh, big time. But totally like, agree with that.
You know, Rolly was doing a solid job selling the fight, whether it be through bad trash talk or his good trash talk. I feel like it's a crazy take to me that people were like, oh yeah, this is going to bomb now and it's going to be terrible because Rolly's not part of it. I don't believe that for a second. I don't think that Rolly was really selling this that much to the extent that Tank's fan base wasn't going to tune in. Like, when we deal with Tank, we're not dealing with the same demo that is watching, let's say, Jermell Charlo. The numbers say otherwise. Javonte Davis has crossed over in a way that very few athletes, or not athletes, but boxers have. So, like, I don't know that Isaac Cruz is as big of a downgrade as, in terms of, like, what he's going to bring to the sales as Rolly. Like Rolly don't got a lot of followers. You know, these clips were hitting, but like Rolly himself is not that popular.
I think it goes like, it's like good and bad, because like when you do the all access, the clips with Rolly will go viral, and like casual boxing fans, and not just casual boxing fans, but like pop culture fans will understand what the deal is when Tank and Rolly are talking trash. I don't think Isaac Cruz is going to pop cross over into that like pop culture lane so much. But what Isaac Cruz will bring, especially since the fight is in Southern California, is like a heavy Latino fan base. And that's strong in itself. So while it's like you trade one thing for the other. And so I don't think the fight is going to get hurt. Gate-wise, ticket sales-wise, viewership-wise, it's just you're dealing with a different kind of audience now. But the fight may end up better. You know, like, you could make the case that Isaac Cruz could push Tank more than Rolly. I don't know.
Well, I think that this is a better fight in terms of, like, the skill that these dudes bring. You ought to read, I'm just going to read a really poorly worded tweet in hindsight. This was on October 23rd, so a little over a week ago. "See, I really fucks with Michael Myers. He is a go-getter. He don't stop until he gets what he wants. I fucks with that mentality. He even waited 40 years. In hindsight, yeah, that one's a little cringy. Oh, God.
I mean, like, listen, at the end of the day, Rolly is a goofball. And it is what it is at this point. I feel like, you know, for me, it's just like, let's just let, you know, the law do what it does. And Rolly will be revisited probably in like 6 to 8 months.
I'm just curious, like, is there any coming back from this?
I mean, it's boxing, man. People have come back from worse.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, Tyson literally did time.
Broke a whole woman's neck. There's been plenty of domestic violence. I think Gotti had a couple and got let in the Hall of Fame like the very next week. Like, I mean, I'm not rooting for Rolly to like get off this, but it's just, it's boxing. I've been conditioned as a boxing fan to like, expect the unexpected, but it's like, this sport is low as far, like the bar is low for everything. Like a lot of the managers, there's no test to get in the sport really that's serious. You just get in and do what you do. Same with the trainers. Same with the fighters. Same with what we expected the fighters. So I think Rolly will bounce back. I guess if he doesn't get in trouble with the police, I'm sure he'll bounce back.
Well, I mean, I would say that hopefully he has to clear his name first before we're about to give him any sort of platform. I think the era of like overlooking this stuff hopefully is coming to an end, and like boxing could shed...
Nah, you know that's not true.
Probably not.
It would be nice. It would be nice if boxing ran like the NBA or NFL. But at the end of the day, the lack of uniformity in the sport and organization will always allow for just weird stuff in general. It might be from commissions, sanctioning bodies, fighters, trainers, managers, promoters. But the weird is here to stay in boxing. And it just is what it is. I mean, Gary Shaw working at the WBA is like the perfect proof of that. But whatever. I mean, it's not about him. It's about Rolly. And Rolly has the hand. Like, the accusations are horrible. And if it's true, then it's a bad look. Bad, bad look.
All right. Well, let's talk. Well, we are going to do a separate podcast on the Canelo plant fight. So if you're here for that, this is not this podcast. I'll be bringing on somebody who I think has never done one of these podcasts before with us. So we'll have a new co-host this coming week. But let me get your take. How you feel about Canelo Plant?
I'm excited, I guess. Like, it's not like 10 out of 10 excited, but it's cool. I mean, whenever Canelo fights, great. Whenever Caleb Plant fights, great. Unification, great. I'm excited. I will say this, though. Being honest, like, I wish Canelo bought more into being an entertainer. I don't think he cares to entertain, and it's cool. But, like, if your claim is you're the face of the sport, I think being the face of the sport comes with entertaining, and not just in the ring. When you look at the lineage of, like, the guy, they bought more, man. They were doing albums. They were doing Nike commercials, Dancing with the Stars, in rap videos, whatever it is, your thing is, tap into that. And I just wish Canelo was more of an entertainer, because the buzz to me doesn't feel like what I wish it was for a Canelo undisputed pay-per-view 168 showdown with a dope American fighter. But with all that said, I'm still excited.
Yeah. How are you leaning?
I mean, like, a draw wouldn't surprise me. A draw wouldn't surprise me. I think you're laughing. Listen, I think I look at it like this. Caleb Plant is 6'2", and he has, I think, 73-inch reach. That's taller and longer arms than Danny Jacobs or Kovalev. I think Caleb is more decisive in his fighting style than Danny Jacobs is, and I think he'll be more prepared for the moment than Kovalev was. My only question is, like, if Canelo is pressuring him, will his tank be okay? And if he starts getting clipped, how will he react to the punches? And if he could take what Canelo has to give, and it's like very, like, redundant, basic take, but whatever. If he could take the punishment, I think it'll be a close fight on the cards. And it'll be a fight that people were happy they watched.
I think I've been seeing that a little more lately, which is people saying that this is going to be a closer fight than people realize. I haven't given it too much thought in terms of, like, what I expect this fight to be. I just haven't really cared enough. I obviously think Canelo's going to win the fight. I have a rule. If I think you're the pound for pound number one fighter, which I do in Canelo's case, I don't sit up here and bet against you. I don't speak ill of your name. I don't do none of that. And so I'm not going to sit here and say anything about Caleb Plant winning, because, I mean, I just don't put those words in my mouth when I'm a guy who thinks Canelo is who he is. But I respect
Canelo. Like, Canelo is supposed to dog Caleb Plant. Just being honest, he's pound for pound number one. He's like, in his last, what, like, six fights, he hasn't lost many rounds. He looks crazy every single fight. So he's supposed to, you know, you listen to all the fighters and trainers, they're like, Caleb Plant's gonna get hospitalized, stop with a body shot, his head gonna land in the third row. Like, they're talking crazy, but at the end of the day, that's why you fight him.
That's
also, you know,
emotion.
Canelo, like, you coming into the ring down four before the first round even starts.
I don't subscribe to that.
Come on. He had a draw, or he beat Floyd on one of the scorecards.
Okay, that's different, though. Like, Golden Boy was out here paying for that. That's fine. Golden Boy knew, though, we obviously know that he's not going to win, but let's just, like, you know, give him a little something. Or CJ Ross was just like, damn, this guy's handsome.
Yeah.
You know, I could see that.
No, listen, at the end of the day, like, you can subscribe to it or not subscribe to it. When you're Canelo, the pound for pound number one, when you're the pound for pound number one guy, you get the benefit of the doubt. So even if it's not down 4-0, any close rounds, Canelo will probably get the edge.
I don't think so. I think...
Come on.
I think one of the things that we'll have to look for in this fight is, you know, if Canelo's doing what it appears he wants to do, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt in these rounds. And I feel like there are certain fighters who have a gravitas to what they do, that even when they aren't the most effective person, if they appear to be doing and the fight is going the way they want it to go whether that's true or not, they get the benefit of the doubt in rounds. And sometimes it's kind of crazy. Like, I feel like the Joshua Usyk fight was like this, where it took a while for people to snap out of, like, them thinking Joshua was winning, when it was like, wait a second, guys, Usyk is winning this fight. And then once it kind of hits people, it's like, oh, okay, I see what it is here. Usyk's out here, like, dogging on him. But yeah, we will wrap it up there. There's more to come on our Patreon. I think the Canelo Plant preview, I believe it'll be released first on the Patreon feed before we drop it on the main feed. So if you like the podcast, we appreciate that. Definitely leave us a good rating or a review. You could also sign up for our Patreon, which gives you access to our chat, which I think is a lot of fun. Constantly discussing whatever the news is happening as it's happening, or you got people like Lex coming in here and giving hot takes, or you just want to see screenshots of people who delete their tweets. That's also a good thing to come to the chat for. Get in as low as $1 and pay whatever you want. I don't care. Lex, any final words for the good people who listen to this podcast?
Nah, man, just stay tapped in, man. I'm hyped for Saturday.
Obviously, I'm sure you're not thrilled about any fight in particular on the undercard, but all of them, you're just excited for them?
I mean, like...
See the return of Ray Vargas.
Yeah. Listen, don't get me started, because, like, this is another boxing thing. Everyone talk about the undercard. Listen, when you're talking about a guy that's aim is to reach 1 million pay-per-views sold, there's only going to be 100,000, give or take, that know anything about an undercard. The other 900,000 are going to be talking about the main event. That's it. So,
those numbers may be a little off. Might be less.
I'm saying Canelo is hoping to sell 1 million.
No. I meant of people who care about the undercard.
Also, you think it's less, like 3% instead of 10?
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
But that is it for us this week. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. We will be back next week.